Life is too short to be anything other than who you are. And you have to have the courage to just, I know this sounds a bit cheesy, but to like stand in your truth and just be like, this is who I am.
Welcome to We Are Child Free, a podcast about child-free women and the lives we lead. I'm your host, Zoe. And each episode, I'll speak with another incredible woman about her decision not to have children and what it's meant for her life. My guest today is Vicky Harris, a traveler, teacher, and artist who's found another way to mother the children of the world. Vix is an amazing woman, and she doesn't even know it. In 20 years, she's traveled to 45 countries, teaching English and soaking up inspiration for her vibrant feminist art. Along the way, she's been a role model for women born with fewer freedoms and sponsored children through their education. One boy from her primary school in Tanzania has just graduated from university and is going to be a teacher himself. Despite all the incredible things she's done, Vic sometimes feels less than as a child-free woman. In our honest and inspiring conversation, she reflects on where her choices have taken her, the privilege which made those decisions possible, and the courage it takes to stand in your truth and say, this is who I am. So here we go. It's my pleasure to introduce Vicky Harris.
I couldn't pinpoint in time when I made a decision as such. I would say that I was very typical when I was a kid that I always just assumed that I would have them. I knew from quite a young age that my mum had got married when she was 24 and I think she'd had her first child when she was 28. So I just kind of thought, oh, you know, same thing, that'll probably happen to me. And then a big influence in my life has been travel. So as I started traveling kind of mid-20s, and that kind of became, you know, I became a TEFL teacher and I was living all over the world. That was the priority, I suppose. And it didn't really occur to me. I didn't kind of think, the whole having kids thing didn't really factor in to my plan much, I suppose. But I wasn't actively like, oh, I don't want children.
Got it. Right.
And then I remember, after teaching in Vietnam for a year, I think I was 36. Maybe I think it was about 36, 37. And I did a year in Vietnam. And then at the end of that year, I decided to travel around Australia to visit some of my Australian friends for 6 weeks before going back to the UK. So I did that. And every friend that I stayed with, apart from one, had kids. When you're staying in someone's house.
intense.
Yeah, and I think I kind of already knew that it wasn't something that was a priority for me. But I hadn't really decided, oh, I don't want them.
Right.
But after that trip, I think I realized at that point how important it was to me to have my own space, to have peace and quiet when I need it, to have that choice, I suppose. And then I started seriously thinking about, oh, maybe you're not going to have children. And I think that was combined with me not being in a serious relationship at that time. And I haven't really had a serious relationship for quite a few years. Again, it hasn't really been a priority.
Yeah.
I think for me, it was more a kind of gradual discovery. And then when I got to my late 30s, I was much more certain about it. And now I'm 46. And so I would say, the older I get, the more certain I become.
And where did you grow up, Vix?
I grew up in a very small village in Staffordshire. So, you know, countryside.
Okay.
And then when I went to art college in Winchester. And when I was away at university, my parents moved to a town that's about 20, 30 minutes away, which is where I'm now living, Ashbourne, Derbyshire.
Right.
So I've always lived in very kind of rural areas. But obviously when I was teaching abroad, I was usually in cities. But yeah, I've moved around a lot. And I think that's also why I kind of got away with, in inverted commas.
Yeah.
And also why a lot of people didn't really ask me about it, because I was always moving. You know, I'd do like a year contract. My first job was in South Korea, and then I went to Hong Kong, and then I went to Spain and Tanzania. And you know what I mean? I just constantly kind of moved around. And so when you do that for a job, you do meet a lot of other women who are kind of doing the same thing.
Right.
Their priority is not to settle down and have kids, you know?
So did you notice any kind of cultural differences between the countries that you were living in about how women...
Yeah, I mean, I'd say most of the teaching I've done has been in Asia. So Korea, for example, that was in 2001 that I first went there, and I would have been, I think it was 27 or 28. And at 27 and 28, that was a big deal that I wasn't married and didn't have children.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And that would get commented on, you know. And there's definitely, I don't know whether it's still the same way in South Korea. I'm sure things have moved on a bit, but I was there like 20 years ago, but... the women very much had to find a husband. And then once they'd got married, it was very much expected that they would have children and stay at home.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds stifling. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's quite interesting, though, because when you live in those places and you get to know your students. And so, for example, when I was living in Vietnam, it was very much the case there as well. But, you know, all the students that I taught were adults, and we used to have such a good time together and really good conversations. And they would, you know, they would ask me about it and say, oh, you know, why aren't you married? Da, da, da. But they were quite curious and interested and not critical about it or judgmental. They just wanted to kind of, they were kind of interested in, I suppose, to a certain extent, how much freedom, you know, and especially when I was teaching in Indonesia, when I was teaching in Jakarta, you know, I had a few female students, again, adults, who would say, oh, you know, you're so lucky that you can travel. And, you know, do you know what I mean? It's like they knew what their path had to, you know, had to look like. And they were kind of quite curious about women who didn't have to do it, you know?
I mean, yeah, the being able to just at the drop of a hat move to another country if you right. want to. I mean, traveling is the ultimate freedom for a right. child-free woman. And obviously you embrace that. And I mean, you couldn't have done that if you'd had a child.
No, exactly. But again, it wasn't ever like, it just happened in a way.
Yeah.
It was very much a kind of organic process. And then it wasn't until I got to my late 30s that I actually kind of was like, oh, you know, I haven't had kids and I don't want them. And it was quite interesting, actually, because when I was a teenager, I remember like one of the scariest things to me was getting pregnant.
Right.
Really, I used to have nightmares about it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I still occasionally do, not so much anymore, but in the last maybe 5 years or so. But I would have nightmares where I was pregnant and I would just be like, oh, my God, what am I going to do?
Yeah. Oh my God. I'm getting a sweat on.
You know what I mean? Like I would be fully like, my stomach would be big and I would just, oh my God, it's too late to have an abortion. Like, what the hell am I going to do? And so when I was a teenager, I remember, you know, I went on the pill quite early because I had like really painful periods. So I think I started taking the pill when I was like 16 or something. But that was also like this thing of like, oh, thank God. Like now I can't get pregnant. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't until like recently that kind of clicked into place, and I thought, actually, you've never had a desire to do that, but I thought when I was a teenager that was a normal thing because, you know, most teenagers don't want to get pregnant.
True.
it's never lost that fear factor. Like it's always very much felt like if it happened, my life would be over, kind of thing.
Yeah. I had a similar feeling as well. Like I couldn't articulate what it was, but I knew that I was terrified about becoming pregnant. And when people would ask me about, oh, you know, it'd be so amazing when you and your husband have kids or whatever. And I'd be like, will it? Why? okay. And yeah, I guess it's this weird thing about women are meant to have this maternal instinct that we're
right.
just born with. And when
right.
you don't apparently have this, whatever this maternal instinct that they think, you know, we have, it's weird. But it doesn't mean that child-free women can't love another being, right?
Yeah, what's interesting about that, I remember my mum saying to me that when she got to a certain age, I think maybe 27, 28, and she said that, you know, if she was walking down the street and she saw a baby in a pram, she was just like, oh my God, like I have to. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I remember her telling me that and I thought, oh, okay, that's interesting. And it just never happened. I never, never felt it. And it's strange because I absolutely love babies.
Yes.
them. And when my nieces were babies, like, oh my God, I just love like cuddling babies and kissing babies and holding babies. And I think the other assumption is that if you don't want children, that you hate kids.
Yes.
And it's like, no, I love babies, you know, and I would love, I mean, my youngest niece now is 7 and I'd love to have another baby in the family. Probably not going to happen now. But yeah, it's that thing of like, I've never physically had that biological reaction of like, I need to get pregnant. I have no desire to be pregnant and I have no desire to give birth.
Yeah, yeah, it makes complete sense to me. Yeah, absolute complete sense. I'm the same as you. I love the smell of a baby. Yeah. You know, I mean, they're just so cute and squidgy.
Yeah.
But then it's amazing being able to hand the baby back.
And another thing for me, which again, it's only relatively recently I've realized, is that I just can't deal with the chaos and the kind of noise that comes with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I need to kind of, I don't think I realized for quite a long time. I always used to think that I was an extrovert because I am quite a confident person and I like being around other people. And, you know, I've got a lot of friends and, but it's only in the last maybe 3 or 4 years that I realized that actually I'm an introvert because I need that time on my own. Like I need to have that time to kind of recharge, you know, like it's just, I couldn't. If I have any kind of repetitive noise or constant distraction, it actually really affects my mental health. And that's something that I don't think I realized about myself until relatively recently. And I was like, ah, okay, so that's another reason why that just didn't appeal to you.
Yeah, and ultimately you need to look after yourself and ensure that, you know, you have a happy, well-adjusted, fulfilling life. And then, you know, if you knew that adding a child into that mix was going to, you know, make that impossible, you know, you wouldn't, you just, how would you ever be happy?
Exactly. And again, it's, I you know, I've always been a very sensitive person and always like very empathetic. So I pick up, you know, I kind of absorb other people's energies and pick up on things that can make too much information or too many things going on can make me feel quite anxious.
Right.
I think that it's a kind of a conscious decision, I suppose, to reduce that kind of noise in my life. And I mean like actual noise, but also kind of mental noise. So, you know, I just can't have too much going on for too long before I start to kind of get stressed. And so I think it's, again, this is like a relatively recent realization that it was just like, oh, okay, you actually really need to have that space and that quiet time to kind of, you know,
decompress. I mean, you are an artist as well, so I imagine that it takes a lot of your time to just focus and do all of that as well, right?
Yeah, and that's the kind of, you know, I do find that it has to be the right conditions for me to be able to be creative. So if I'm just distracted or stressed out, it's not going to happen, you know.
Yeah,
so I have to be in that kind of quiet space. I have to be completely on my own. Like I can't even, when I lived in Singapore, me and my friend Bo used to go to the beach, you know, and she'd say, oh, you know, let's take our sketchbooks and we'll draw together. And we would do it, but I always felt that whatever I drew, if I was with someone else, was never as good as what I would draw if I was on my own. So it's almost like I need to have that complete solitude and that complete peace and quiet to be able to actually produce something that I really like, you know?
Right. Because, yeah, I mean, tell me more about your art. Your artwork is stunning. It's amazing. So everyone, I will share the link at the end of the podcast so everyone can go and check Vix's work out. But it's, yeah, obviously feminism is a strong theme in there.
Yeah.
And is that what you've always kind of been drawn to?
Yeah, because my mum, she had 3 children and stayed at home with all of us until I think my sister was 12. And then she got a job at a building society. And I think she was just kind of, I don't know what she was doing initially, but it was, you know, photocopying and bits and pieces. And she kind of worked her way up and became a trainer. And then she started doing this thing called Springboard, which is still going now, which is like women's assertiveness training. So she would go into businesses, factories, places like that, and deliver this training to women who were maybe on the factory floor, or, you know, who maybe weren't thinking in terms of moving their way up. I don't like the expression, the career ladder, but you know what I mean? Like,
yes,
you know, get to promotion, or, you know, and this was back in, it would have been what, late 80s, early 90s, maybe. And
right.
It was the first, she was one of the first trainers. So this was a new kind of business setup that no one had done before. And she's very, you know, she's always worked. She's always done what she's wanted to do. After that, she became a life coach. So,
oh, wow.
You know, very much, like, she somehow got this really fine balance down between being an excellent mum,
yeah,
spending time with us, but also never not doing what she wanted to do. Do you know what I mean? And my
yeah,
very supportive of that as well. So I've always had her as a role model in that respect. And then I think, you know, traveling around and living in different countries and seeing how women are treated in different places, and obviously recognizing the privilege that I have in having a British passport and being able to just teach English for a living, and, you know,
yeah,
all of these things that a lot of women just don't even, I mean, even just getting an education, you know, I think that's always been really something that I've thought about a lot. And yeah, it's just a part of who I am, I suppose.
I mean, when you messaged me as well, when you initially wrote to me, you talked about how you were sponsoring one of the kids from your class in Tanzania. And
yeah,
you know, you said something really beautiful about that you had mothered him in a way that had impacted both of your lives in yeah, such a positive way. Can you yeah, tell me more about that?
So my parents met in Kenya. They got married in Nairobi. My sister was born in Nairobi. And then they moved back to the UK and they had me. And then right, after they bought a house and everything, had me. And then after a couple of years, my dad got a job in Malawi. So then they moved to Malawi, and that's where my brother was born. So I grew up, you know, our house had lots of, like, you know, photos that my dad had taken on safari, and like African drums and statues. And I was surrounded by all things African, basically.
Right.
When I, you know, I was creative from quite a young age, and a lot of my projects that I did at school were based on African textiles or African tribes, or I was just obsessed with it. So I got to a point, I always wanted to go back, because I lived in, I'm not sure how long I was in Malawi for, maybe 3 or 4 years. I wasn't there for long, but I do remember bits and pieces about it. But I always wanted to go back, and I just thought, I don't want to just go back for a holiday. I want to have, like, a chunk of time where I can properly kind of get to know the people and, you know, just be absorbed a bit by the culture and everything. So I did 3 years teaching in Hong Kong. And at the end of those 3 years, I thought, you know what, I've saved some money. If I don't do this, I'd literally been talking about it for about 5 years. I've been saying, oh, I'm going to go back to Africa and I'm going to do this. And, you know, one of my friends was like, stop talking about it and go and do it.
Fair enough.
I got to the end of these 3 years in Hong Kong. I was like, right, this is your opportunity, because you've got some money behind you. You could go and do voluntary work and live there and, you know, do something like that. So I did a bit of research and I found this British organization called Mondo Challenge. I think they're called Mondo Challenge Foundation now. So I got in touch and I said, look, I really want to go to Kenya, because, you know, that's where my parents met and da 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 da. And they got back to me and said, we don't really need you in Kenya, but we do need you in Tanzania. And at this point, I think I had 6 years of experience as an English teacher. So they said, you know, we can place you in a Tanzanian primary school teaching English, etc. So I was like, yeah, brilliant. So, yes, I ended up living with a family in a quite a large village, actually. So the north of Tanzania, so just kind of not far from the border with Kenya, there's a town called Arusha, which is where a lot of tourists go to do, you know, the Serengeti and Ngorongoro Crater and all of those kind of things. So it was a village that was about 20 minutes from Arusha called Ngaramtoni. And I struck gold, because the family that I lived with were absolutely, I mean, it's 13 years later and we're still madly in love with each other.
Oh, that's awesome.
And they're messaging me and phoning me. And, oh, Vicky, their eldest son is getting married on the 26th of December. So they're like, Vicky, you've got to come to the wedding. And,
oh,
you know, that it's not the best time to be traveling. And they are just the most beautiful people I could ever have met. And I had a student in my class who had the biggest smile you've ever seen. Would always have his hands up, like always wanted to answer the questions, really enthusiastic, just a lovely, lovely kid. And at the end of the 3 months that I was teaching, they had exams and he was getting like 80, 90% in most of his subjects. So I just thought, oh my God, like if this kid, you know, is kind of given the opportunity, he could totally go and, you know, become a doctor or whatever he wanted to do essentially.
Yeah.
Spoke to one of the Tanzanian teachers and I said, you know, is it possible to meet his family or, you know, what's the situation kind of thing? So I went to meet his father, who's just the loveliest man ever. He's a farmer.
Right.
He's got seven kids. He was taking care of seven kids.
Wow.
Or what happened with the mum, but the mum wasn't around. I don't know whether she died or I'm not sure. But yeah, so Dabiri was, I think, the fourth of the seven children, I think.
Right.
And you know, the Tanzanian teacher explained to his father that I would like to support him in his studies. So, you know, buy his books for him, buy his school uniform, that kind of thing. And he still, I think at that point, he still had another year or so at primary school, I think. So it just started with me basically sending £10 a month, and that covered books and whatever he needed. And then it kind of turned into, like, after I got home, you know, I was telling friends about it and family members, and they were like, oh, you know, we'd love to get involved. What can we do? So I was just really lucky because the father of the family that I was living with, Mr. David, was like a real kind of pillar of the community. Like everyone knew him. He knew everybody. He was really proactive. He loved kind of getting involved in projects and supporting his community. And he was the person who was like checking up on the kids. And, you know, so we ended up all together, I think we ended up sponsoring about 10 kids.
Wow.
And basically kind of putting them through school and getting their books and their uniform and everything. And all of those children, as far as I know, have graduated secondary school.
Oh, that's amazing.
But Dabiri went on, not only did he do secondary school, he then went on to university in Dar es Salaam. And he is now in his final year and he is going to be a teacher.
Wow, that's amazing.
When he told me that, I was just like, oh my God, like 13 years ago, I was your teacher and now you are a teacher. And I'm not saying, don't get me wrong, like that is not all down to me.
No, but you
know, he's got a very supportive family. Mr. David has just done so much to encourage him. And he's just, you know, that I could just tell when I met him that he just wanted to learn, you know, just wanted to study. And his English is brilliant. So we have WhatsApp messages all the time and chat to each other. And you know, I'm trying to learn Swahili at the moment. So he helps me with that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think he's something like, what would he be now? I think he's like 23, 24.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you know, travel-free women are often painted as not being useful in this society. Like because we don't want to have children, we can't have them, you know, we're not going to give anything back to the society. And I kind of view it in such the opposite way, because when I'm talking to, you know, child-free women, they're telling me about the impact that they have. That is you, Vicky. You are having such a positive impact on so many different people's lives. You know, but take into consideration the environment and all those extra factors. But I see child-free women as having this amazing positive impact on the world, you know, and that's what we need to actually be talking about. Not that we are, you know, we're somehow
lacking.
Yeah, it's so ridiculous in my eyes.
It's interesting you should say that, because it did just occur to me actually that maybe one of the reasons that I kind of minimized the whole teaching thing.
Right.
I think that's generally speaking, and this is a generalization, that women are kind of taught to minimize.
Mm.
Right. And just, yes. Oh, no, it's nothing. Oh, no. Mm-hmm. And I think I kind of fell into that trap. And so I didn't really look at what it was that I was doing and how I am helping people, because I didn't go down the traditional route of getting married and having kids. And it's almost like that is celebrated more, and that is more of an achievement than doing anything else, right? So I think in my own head, I minimized what I was doing and didn't see it as that important because I hadn't gone down that traditional route.
I mean, that makes complete sense. I mean, I catch myself doing it in my own life and work where I'm like talking down about myself, and I'm like, well, hang on, why am I doing this? Because, you know, yeah, it's we need to empower women to feel like they are having a positive impact on this world, and it doesn't need to include children. It doesn't.
No, and I think we're at a really exciting time as well in that respect, because I do think that things are starting to change. There's definitely a bit more understanding in terms of what women are capable of, which, you know, doesn't have anything to do with having babies, right? Like, it's there are more opportunities now for women who've chosen not to do that. And I think women who don't have children definitely feel more empowered and like they have more options. And, you know, it's no longer that thing of like, oh, like, let's feel sorry. I mean, obviously there are women who can't have children. That's a completely different thing, I think. I think if you have decided that that is not for you, then there are so many more. I mean, even, you know, just this podcast and your website and everything, it's like, would that have existed 10 years ago? I don't know. Just to hear, like, you know, one of my favorite people is Elizabeth Gilbert, the writer. And whenever I listen to her on podcasts, when she talks about this, I just think, oh my God, you know, there are so many great women out there now who have chosen not to have children and who are very vocal about it. And so we have these role models now, which maybe we wouldn't have had 10, 20 years ago, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, you told me earlier about you have a group of friends and most of them don't have children as well, right?
I would say, yeah, my four or five closest friends do not have kids. And I think that's part of the reason why we're so close. I mean, it's interesting because my friend Lisa, who's one of my best mates, who I've known her since I was like seven or something. So let's say, for the sake of argument, like 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
She ended up not having children. So it's not like I met them recently and was like, oh, you don't have kids either. Great. Do you know what I mean? It's like, these are friendships that I've had for decades. And we just went in the same direction. You know, we just, you know, for different reasons in some cases, we were just like, yeah, it's not for us. And I feel so lucky in that respect because I have such interesting conversations with those women, partly sometimes about this, you know, about not wanting kids and about feeling marginalized sometimes, you know, but those friendships are so important to me because the depth of those friendships is, you know, it's incredible. I can show up 100% with those women and be completely me and not feel like I have to kind of agree to something I don't want to do or talk about something I don't want to talk about. And I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to sound negative about my friends who do have kids, but I do feel like there are certain things that you stop talking about after people have children, because it's almost like the conversation returns to a kind of surface level.
Right.
And this is a generalization. I'm not saying it happens for everyone, but I do feel like there's this assumption that you're going to be interested in their children.
Yeah.
Which, you know, and it might sound harsh, but I'm not.
No, it doesn't sound harsh to me.
I don't mean that in a harsh way, but I just want to be honest about this. I'm not interested in talking about other people's kids.
No, I mean, why would that assumption be that you would be interested in talking about someone else's kids? We don't assume that they are interested in talking about, I don't know, my random stamp collection or whatever it is.
That's the thing, though, isn't it? There is an assumption that you will want to talk about them, that you will want to spend time with them.
Yeah,
and I think that is one of the trickiest things to deal with when close friends have children, because I don't change, right? I don't change. I'm still interested in the things I'm interested in, and I still love having really in-depth, interesting conversations. But if you then can't do that anymore, and if you have to be talking about what school you're trying to get them into or, you know, whatever it is,
Yeah.
It's, you do have this, I have a feeling of guilt of just of not wanting to talk about that. You know, it's like I can't feign interest in something that I'm just not interested in. So then you do, you know, the friendship does shift somewhat and you kind of lose that depth of conversation. And that's the thing that I struggle with because of the way I am and because of how I think and everything, it's like I need those deep conversations. And you can't have those if you're constantly distracted or if you're thinking about other things, you know. So, and you don't have the time for it either. Like once you have kids,
yeah,
so much less time for those kind of things, you know, to talk. I've got a friend, my friend Jen, shout out to Jen who lives in Singapore, actually talk on the phone for like 5 hours at a time.
Oh, wow.
we have to like block off a whole morning or an afternoon. And then we're like, oh, look, we've just done 5 hours. We're like, what? And then we're like, oh, actually, I need to go to the toilet or actually I need to eat. Do you know what I mean? Like that's...
I love it though.
I'm not saying every friendship should be like that. But to me, that's the sustenance for me. Like I love that stuff. And if I can't do that with you, then I do feel like the friendship starts to slip.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense, doesn't it? And that's the thing, I hope with this podcast, with the community that we, you know, we're building, I don't want any woman to feel that they're alone because they don't have friends who made the same, because that's the reality. We know that, you know, if you do have friends and they have kids, it's going to change. Your relationship will change. And I'm kind of, yeah, I've got three friends who've had kids this year, and now they're slowly starting to overtake my child-free friends. So now I have to accept that maybe people who I know are going to change. So can I build a community around me of child-free women that maybe they don't even have to live in my city, you know, or my country,
right.
But just knowing that other child-free women are out there and loving their lives, like it's the best feeling, you know? I mean, what would you say, you know, there are lots of child-free women who can't be so open about this decision, or maybe they do feel alone as well. So what would you tell them? What one thing would you tell them?
This is more of a general point, which is something that I have come to relatively recently. It's that thing of, life is too short to be anything other than who you are. And you have to have the courage to just, I know this sounds a bit cheesy, but to like stand in your truth and just be like, this is who I am. It's so important to get to that point in your life where you're just like, look, this is who I am. And if you don't like it, tough shit, you know?
Yeah.
And if, you know, sometimes that does mean that friendships drop off. And sometimes that does mean that someone who you thought you were really close to actually isn't the person you thought they were. But I think it is much, much better to be surrounded by two or three people who totally get you and accept you for who you are than, you know, hundreds of people who don't get you or are expecting you to be something other than who you are. And I think it's that thing of getting to know yourself so well that you will make decisions for yourself regardless of what anyone else's opinion is on that. And I think the lovely thing about getting older is that becomes easier to do. It just, for some reason, it's especially for women, I think, once you get into your 40s, it becomes very much, do you know what? I'm just going to start doing the stuff that I need to do for myself, and everyone else can slot into that. And if they don't want to, then they don't have to.
I think that's a wonderful message, Vicky. I mean, yeah, you have to embrace the life that you want to live. And, you know, we only get one chance, so we have to live it. Thank you so, so much, Vicky, for sharing your amazing life and experiences. I mean, you've traveled so many. I think I read that you traveled to how many countries in 20, 30 countries in 20 years?
I don't know, but I've done 45 altogether.
So. 45 in 20 years. I mean, you have done some incredible things with your life. And I'm so, so impressed and amazed at what you've been able to accomplish and the impact that you do have on people's lives through your teaching. So please never, ever doubt the impact that you do have.
Oh, thank you.
We Are Child Free is hosted by me, Zoe Noble, and produced by James Glazebrook. If you liked this episode, please leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, as this really helps other people find us. head to wearechildfree.com to read more stories from incredible childfree women and find out how to share your story with me. Speak soon, lovelies.